Want to try a free sample of berry pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, time to consult the online experts.
One bite will destroy your body.
Stop it!
They don't know your body. Only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. Get $10 off select plans at Cygnos.com. Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
In hip-hop, the authenticity that comes with writing your own rhymes is super important. As a result, the accusation that you don't write your own rhymes is pretty much one of the most damaging things that you can say about an artist. Sometimes, it's even been enough to literally end careers. While for others, such as those we'll be discussing today, it's put a massive asterisk to their name forever. And today, we're going to be talking about rappers who survived ghostwriting scandals. When you mention a rapper who's had their legacy questioned after it was revealed that someone else wrote some of their bars, then the Six God is probably one of the first people you think of. Ever since it was revealed that he had some help from time to time on his work, people have looked at him a little sideways. In fact, there are some rappers who feel that his use of a ghostwriter prevented him from ever being in the conversation when it comes to being labeled as one of the goats of hip-hop.
Do you think that that ghostwriting thing knocked Drake out of the lyricist, you know, top list?
It has to. It's only fair. Before I had that, I was like, okay, Drake, Kendrick, you know, Cole, they in the battle for it. Once he got a writer, you know what I'm saying? He's not in the battle with Cole and Kendrick in my eyes no more. He's with Swizz, Diddy, and Kanye in them.
Although it was a move that had some people looking at him like an entertainer rather than a rapper, Drake's ghostwriting scandal is something you barely ever hear get factored into a discussion about him these days, let alone the collateral damage that was left in the process that permanently derailed the life and career of a man who penned those rhymes in the first place. Before he ever linked up with Drake, Quentin Miller was a member of an Atlanta-based crew by the name of Wedding Crashers. Once people realized how solid his pen game was, Drake put in the call to have Quentin join his team as he was putting together the now legendary project titled If You're Reading This, It's Too Late. Suddenly taken from obscurity to working with one of the biggest artists in the world, Quentin's involvement with Drake wasn't ever formally announced. Instead, users on forums like Kanye2Da.com was wondering who the new man in Drake's entourage who was repping his label was. Just kinda weird they gave him an OVO chain, and he just recently started hanging out with them. Could be the next OVO signee. But as the world would soon learn by the way of Drake running into conflict with another top tier artist, Quentin was never signed to OVO. Instead, that chain wouldn't even count as a consolation prize for all the chaos that was about to invade his life. When Meek Mill and Drizzy teamed up for the track Rico on Dreams and Nightmares, everything seemed above board. After they had worked together previously on Amen from the Philly rappers' Dreams and Nightmares project, the link up looked like it was going to be the next installment of a great creative partnership. Instead, it was going to be the spark that not only exposed Drake's use of a ghostwriter, but destroyed a man who helped him write the rhymes in the process. On Rico, Drake spit the line, "The girl of your dreams to me is probably not a challenge." Now, that's pretty standard of the kind of bravado that rappers hit us with on every other track. But because there's always been rumors about whether or not Drake has ever had a thing with Meek's then-girlfriend and Drizzy's fellow Young Money soldier, Nicki Minaj, Meek thought the bar might have been a little shot at him. However, he would soon change his mind. But this wasn't the end of the story, and that little misunderstanding was about to spark diss tracks, public statements, and even acts of violence. All it took to set that in motion was another series of tweets from Meek, starting off with this one, where he says, "Stop comparing me to Drake. He don't write his rhymes. That's why he ain't tweet my album, cause we found out. He ain't even write that verse on my album, and if I would've knew, I would've took it off. I don't trick my fans." Considering Drake is still a huge star to this day, you'd be forgiven for thinking that these accusations weren't really a big deal. But at the time, they were the talk of the entire industry. Ever since he came out the gate, Drake was basically seen as one of the leading artists in the game, alongside Cole and Kendrick. So the news that he wasn't writing his own rhymes was a massive mark against him in the eyes of hip-hop pursuits. Meanwhile, OVO insiders like 40 tried to do damage control. If someone wants to be upset that Drake made a great album, go for it. But don't ever question my brother's pen. Soon, the name of the man who was giving Drake a helping hand came out to the public, and it turned his life upside down forever. In the liner notes of If You're Reading This, It's Too Late, the name Quentin Miller pops up on tracks like Six Man, Now and Forever, Company, and You in the Six. Considering he got credit, Miller isn't exactly a ghostwriter, but no one cared about that when the headline that Drake doesn't write his own raps was much more scandalous. Particularly when the receipts for Meek's claims emerged in the form of a reference track for Rico that Funkmaster Flex played live on air.
Oh, money, new women, gotta keep it bouncing. The girl of your dreams to me is probably not a challenge.
As for other people knowing, Stephen Dingle, the manager of OG Macko, basically confirmed that everyone from Atlanta knew, saying, "Atlanta is a small circuit. Everybody knows each other. So we've been rocking with Mac and Quentin," Dingle said. Before the project came out, we just knew he was working with Drake. We heard the records and stuff like that. He probably had a confidentiality agreement or something like that, because he never purposely said, "Yeah, I'm writing for Drake." We just heard records and he was like, "Yeah, man, Drake reached out." OG Macko took the same stance too, arguing that Quentin should embrace the credit he deserved for contributing to some genuine hits. "You hear 6 p.m. in New York, that's clearly Drake. It's amazing, it's lyrically profound," he told All Hip Hop. "But 6 p.m. in New York is not what everybody played every fucking day. It's 10 bands, and that's Quentin Miller. I wasn't like, Drake. I was just trying to show that it's these underground dudes that y'all keep trying to discredit that's really out here boosting artists." Although people like Macko were fighting his corner and Meek was using him as ammunition in his beef with Drake, Quentin clearly didn't want to be known as someone who wrote tracks behind the scenes. As a result, he released a lengthy statement where he claimed, "Most of the project was done before I came into the picture. I remember him playing it for me for the first time thinking, why am I here? Like, what does he need me for? The answer is nothing. I am not and never will be a ghostwriter for Drake. I'm proud to say that we've collaborated, but I could never take credit for anything other than a few songs we worked on together." Although he wanted to use him as his ace in the hole with his beef with Drake, Quentin wasn't feeding into the narrative that Meek wanted to create. And the Philly rapper was about to take drastic measures to try and get him to do his bidding. And soon, Quentin was about to learn that for him, nothing would ever be the same for him ever again. Meek and his crew caught up with him in LA, and allegedly, under the direction of Nicki Minaj herself, assaulted him.
One of his mans came back like with his phone out and he was like, "Yo, I need you to go on camera saying you apologized to Meek Mill and everything you said is a lie." And I was just like, "Nah, man, like, I'm not doing this shit." This is really my first time really talking with Meek, and basically told me, like, you know, he didn't appreciate the letter that I dropped and it made him seem like he was a liar or whatnot. And they stole off on me in the Nike store and ran. I shed blood in the Nike store on Wilshire.
From that point on, there was no more OVO Quentin Miller. Rather than being the new signee that the world thought he was going to be, he's pretty much been left on the shelf and only has about 50,000 monthly listeners on Spotify to this day. Meanwhile, for Drake and Meek, they have since moved on like nothing happened, squashing the beef officially when they reunited on Going Bad for Meek's 2018 project called Championships.
Anybody that knows me knows that my strongest talent is writing. That is my strongest talent.
But understandably, Quentin feels a little bitter over how much damage his career and reputation took, only for them to patch it all up without ever making amends with him.
His best friends now, they watch basketball games and they do shows and shit together, you know? So it's just like, what the fuck was that even for? What the fuck was all of that for? You know, like, all the stress that it caused, you know? And I know it. Everybody else is able to move on because everybody else's careers was established and shit. My career wasn't established. It's just crazy how the biggest, best moment of my life, you know, after a tweet turned into like one of the most stressful moments of my life.
Left struggling to rebuild, Quentin has kept trying to clear his name and let people know that he isn't a ghostwriter by trade. But that's all the mainstream ever sees him as.
I'm not a writer, and that's like the interesting thing, and to all industry people out there and labels out there, like, please, I want y'all to know that I am not a writer. Don't invite me to your writers' camps. Like, that was a special situation that just happened to happen. It was an opportunity, and, you know, we just happened to be on the same wave.
Aside from a few bars from Pusha T at the height of their beef about how it was written like Nas, but it came from Quentin, Drake hasn't really had too much flack about the whole thing. And in an interview with Rap Radar, he said he didn't even regret it.
"I've really made my peace. I have no embarrassment when it comes to what I did on that album. I worked with somebody on, I think, 4 or 5 songs on that record. I pulled my weight when it came to my..."
Hi guys, here's my morning routine. First, I drink olive oil, like a lot of it. Yep, that's good. Then I stare at a red light. It's the kind that helps your cells positively glow. Oh, wow, really bright, okay. Next, I take an ice bath. That's how you melt your fat and fix your, I don't know, other stuff. Ooh, yep, feeling super healthy. Can't fit my toes. Breakfast is raw liver. Okay, here we go. Oh, real good.
If your health advice sounds strange coming from a kid, maybe it's just strange. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads, no fear, just your signal. Get $10 off select plans at cygnos.com. That's Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
And it wasn't like I needed somebody to facilitate, you know, entire ideas. We worked together. If I need to be the poster child that took all those hits for all my peers hiding behind me that do the same thing every album, that's fine. I'll do it, you know, because there's a lot of people that link up with other people and make records that you guys love.
But while he's made his peace with it, the same can't really be said for Quentin, and even all these years later, it seems like neither Drake or Meek will acknowledge the damage they did to Miller's life. And considering that Drake is still the biggest artist in the world, and was even revealed to have done some ghostwriting himself for artists ranging from The Weeknd to Kanye West, it's pretty clear he got off light compared to Miller. But another superstar who hasn't been completely able to escape the consequences of pretending she wrote her own bars, or not giving her co-writers the credit they deserve, is Cardi B. First bursting onto the screens on Love & Hip Hop, no one would have predicted that Cardi B would become one of the biggest stars in modern hip hop. But even as she began to drop charting mixtapes as an independent artist, like Gangsta Bitch Volumes 1 and 2, it became clear that she had some star power at the very least. Suddenly, her song Bodak Yellow would make her the first solo female rapper to have a number one hit since Lauryn Hill's Doo-Wop that dropped in 1998, while the release of her album Invasion of Privacy made her the fifth female rapper in history to have an album top the charts. But with all that success came all sorts of scrutiny, including claims that she had a ghostwriter. At first, Cardi outright rejected these accusations.
I guess a lot of people just assume that you had a ghostwriter, or you got, you know, someone was just writing for you, but you actually do all your own shit.
Yeah, the thing is that I'm from New York and I listen to hip hop like practically my whole life. As I'm writing things, I study when these guys be freestyling, what is considered bars, what are considered metaphors.
But as the spotlight kept increasing around her, people started digging and quickly discovered that things weren't exactly as they appeared. In the Invasion of Privacy project alone, it was quite common to see co-writers listed. In the case of Partisan Fontaine, he was credited on 12 out of 13 tracks on the project, including Bodak Yellow. Videos also surfaced of him performing songs like Be Careful in their entirety, a full year before Cardi released her version.
Man, I thought you would have learned your lesson about liking pictures, not returning texts. I guess it's fine, man, I get the message.
Man, I thought you would have learned a lesson about liking pictures, not returning texts. I guess it's fine, man, I get the message.
Rather than hold her hands up to it, Cardi began to deflect and bring everyone else down along with her. Meanwhile, Party did his part to keep from revealing the truth of the matter whenever he was asked about it in interviews.
There's a lot of gossip about you being Cardi's ghostwriter. Is that true, Seth?
Hold on, pinch me. I feel like a ghost to you.
At every opportunity, both Cardi and Fontaine have refused to confirm or deny the extent of the writing he did on her projects. However, it's clear that once she got caught receiving help with her lyrics, all her previous talk about studying freestyles seemed to have disappeared.
I like to make money. I don't really give a fuck about being lyrical. I like to make shit that's gonna climb me off on the charts. Like, I wanna make money.
Unsurprisingly, this didn't help her reputation in the eyes of diehard hip-hop fans, with some users commenting things like, she literally says she only does it for money and she doesn't make real shit because they don't play it in the club. Let's go ahead and separate the artist from entertainers. And I can't believe you guys allowed this girl into the rap industry. Ever since the Partisan Fontaine scandal, Cardi has tried to act as if she's turned over a new leaf and as late as July of 2023, she's been offering people to come to a studio session just to prove she's the real author of her rhyme. But it'd be a lot easier to believe that what went down with Party wasn't the sole incident. Released as a standalone single after Invasion of Privacy, her track Press was also proven to be penned by an unknown artist by the name of Ludini. Although Cardi's team initially denied it, they soon dropped the receipts of email exchanges with her team and reference tracks to prove what really went down. Suddenly, she was exposed yet again. Considering that she's still a megastar, she's likely not that sorry. But the constant shadiness over who she's working with or the process of how Cardi actually makes music hasn't exactly been great for her reputation. However, our next entry has managed to escape pretty much all of that, and if anything, he's caused problems for his ghostwriters by being too eager to expose them. Since the early days of his career, Kanye West has always employed the talents of other MCs to help fine-tune his own rhymes. Over the years, he's enlisted the skills of everyone, from Consequence to Sci-Hi the Prince, Fonzworth Bentley, and others. Rhymefest literally wrote Jesus Walks. Meanwhile, people like Malik Yusuf have been around since the outset and worked extensively across his records. In fact, Malik's fingerprints were all across The Life of Pablo, to the point that he literally had to clarify he didn't pen the whole thing. I was quoted as saying I wrote the entire Life of Pablo LP, and that's completely false, he said after the whole thing came out. When asked about my contribution to the project, I simply stated that I contributed to every song, not that I wrote every song. Although I could delve into exactly what every individual person wrote for Ye, there'd really be no point because for the most part, there's been no scandal attached. Because Ye is a producer first and a rapper second, he, similar to another individual we'll be discussing on this list, essentially receives a pass to seek help in a way that traditional MCs might not. Yet, the problems Kanye has faced with his writing team stems from the times he spoke up when it wasn't needed. First off, there was the drama which surrounded his album Ye, and specifically the track Violent Crimes. In October of 2018, West took to his always chaotic Twitter account to make some revelations about the process behind one of his latest album's best and most loved songs, saying, quote, "Partisan Fontaine wrote the Violent Crimes verses. I changed two lines. He wrote the entire song though. Sci-Hi Khan's Party, the ghost in the industry." Although some would see this as Ye just giving Fontaine his flowers, it was something that Party was less than pleased about. "Nobody needed to know," he told GQ. "I hit him up about that, like, that's not why I do it for." Already contending with the fallout of writing for Cardi, it's clear that he didn't want things to go down the Quentin Miller route. And over time, he opened up about how it all went down, and basically, working with Ye isn't an opportunity he could turn down.
He reached out. I wanted to talk to Push. I'm like trying to get Push on the record. And he's like, "Yo, Kanye was just talking about you." I'm like, "What?" He's talking about me, and Kanye's one of my biggest influences, like an icon. I love Kanye. So when he said that Kanye wanted to work with me, I was just like taken back. So Kanye sends me a text a little while later, like, "Yo, can I call you?" I'm like, "Bro, I've been waiting for this call my whole life."
In other interviews, he remained positive that all of these ghostwriting allegations wouldn't hinder his actual career.
Is it difficult at all for you to establish yourself as your own individual? Is that a fight for you? Is that still an uphill battle for you?
To me, like where I'm from, to get any type of light was like a ladder, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I just needed a little stepping stone, you know what I'm saying? So regardless of what people knew me for or associated my name with, they knew my name, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, they know me for something. Half the battle is won.
After contributing to 5 out of 7 tracks on Ye, the project marked the end of Partisan's working relationship with West. But rather than take off since then, he's still stuck in the same territory as he was then. An elite spitter who just hasn't quite broken out on his own. But sometimes, Ye's issues with his ghostwriters happen long after they've obtained fame and fortune. And in the case of Talib Kweli, he's unwisely took a shot at a man who literally put him on. Back in the start of West's career, Kweli was already an established star as both a solo artist and member of Black Star. After the two became friends, Kweli took Ye on tour with him and gave him early exposure to the limelight. Fast forward 20 years later, and during Ye's infamous interview with Drink Champs, he randomly decided to take a few shots at Kweli.
"If I be like you, Kweli, I'll be where you at. Now, if you take the average 99% of people say, do you want to be Kweli or do you want to be Ye? More people going to want to be Ye. I love Kweli. I never really liked the way he rapped. I apologize once again to Kweli. I'm sorry. I never f***ed with your rap." Oh, shit. I did just see that. I totally forgot. Oh, man. Now I'm really going to have to fight this man. It's going to be 10 the fitted caps from 12 years ago chasing me.
Although Ye dishing out his opinions to the world isn't exactly anything new, this seemed more ill-advised than most, considering how respected Talib is in the hip-hop world. In response, he shared an IG post which exposed each and every person who'd written for Ye over the years, titled Kanye West Ghostwriter Appreciation Post. Among those photographed was Common, Pusha T, John Legend, Consequence, GLC, Party, and a whole lot more, with several of the ghostwriters in question posting to insist it was a collaborative process rather than them just writing Ye's rhymes. Talib still wasn't over the disrespect and continued to sound off in the comments. I agree, Ye is more talented enough to write a whole album with no help. He doesn't though, so he shouldn't be shitting on the skills of those who do. For Ye, it was never using writers that was the problem, just the moments where he mistreated them or ignored their requests for discretion that it reflected badly upon him. But when he does treat them right, he's been able to maintain healthy, mutual, beneficial relationships that have lasted for years. However, another man who's also suggested to keep that same balance over the years and left one ghostwriter in particular out to dry is Dr. Dre. Much like Kanye, Dre has had plenty of positive experiences with ghostwriters. Renowned for his prowess with beats rather than bars, Dre has spit other people's lyrics since the days where Ice Cube wrote all of his bars for him and Eazy-E when NWA was still together. After Dr. Dre's partnership with Ice Cube deteriorated, he left the group. Then the DOC came on board, teaming up with Snoop Dogg to write many of the lyrics you hear on a classic album like The Chronic. Over the years, Royce da 5'9", Rakim, Nocturnal, and Kendrick Lamar have all taken turns writing bars for Dre without any issue. But when it came to the follow-up of The Chronic after many years, Dre needed a new flavor. And that's where a recent signee, famously known as Marshall Mathers, came into the equation. Exploiting into Dre's orbit at a time where the doctor needed a win, Dre famously knew he struck gold from the very minute he played A Beat to M, as within minutes of meeting each other, the song My Name Is came out almost fully formed. With that kind of level of skill, it's no surprise that Dre wanted to recruit M as a part of the writing staff for his next album titled 2001. Regarding his contributions to the project, it was well known that Eminem wrote one of the album's biggest hits directly. Additionally, What's the Difference was confirmed by DOC to also have been penned by Eminem as well, after a fan brought it up in a tweet. Among the other tracks that M has credits on within the album are The Watcher, Let's Get High, and Bang Bang. Another few timeless hits from Dr. Dre are featured as two of the biggest songs on the album, amassing over 2.1 billion listens combined, with Still Dre, which was ghostwritten by Jay-Z, and Forgot About Dre. Despite featuring Eminem on the studio version, Forgot About Dre was initially intended for the duo of Dre and Snoop.
That was Eminem's idea. He wrote the song for me and Snoop originally. He laid the reference vocals for Snoop, and I liked the way it sounded, so we just kept it that way, and I laid my vocals, and that was it. I have no idea what, you know, what triggered him to write that song. You know, he just came in with those lyrics, and we wrote some music to it, and that was that.
And as we know, this song was an instant classic, winning Best Rap Performance by a Duo or Group at the Grammys, and remaining one of Dre's most iconic tracks to this day. As for Hove, his contributions to Still Dre were so neatly spelled out for Dre and Snoop that all they had to do was head to the studio and follow the reference track.
On that reference track, I'm doing Dre and Snoop's. The reference track sounds like them.
But for every other ghostwriter that is treated well, there's always one who slips through the cracks and is hung out to dry. In Dre's case, that man is J Flex. While at Death Row Records, J Flex turned into one of Dr. Dre's preferred ghostwriters after they met by chance at a traffic light, where Flex handed Dre his demo tape. During his time working with Dr. Dre, J Flex quickly made a mark on writing tracks such as California Love in just 30 minutes and crafting Dre's memorable verse on Natural Born Killers. But where others like Snoop and M were elevated to fame after their internship writing for Dre, this didn't happen for the man who was seen on the record as James Anderson. And unlike the DOC, whose shot at being a star was destroyed where he crushed his vocal cords in a car accident, it wasn't because he wasn't ready. In fact, Dre basically used J Flex's skills and threw him to the wolves. Eventually, this would lead to Flex dissing him on the track Been There Done That, where he outlined how much he'd been allegedly scammed. No question the real about the DRE is that he damn near had me writing rhymes for free, ain't trying to give me no royalty, make a mill off my shit and give me a few G's, since way back when he was with Easy, stealing credits from Snoop in the DOC. Compelled to make a diss this track by Suge Knight, after Dr. Dre left Death Row behind, releasing that track probably stopped any chance of reconciliation between the two. But to this day, Flex still feels a way about how Dr. Dre just cast him aside and into a potentially deadly situation with Suge.
I don't have no animosity because he didn't have to pull over and stop and take my tape. So I'm going to be forever grateful to him for that. But what he told us was that he was going to take care of our contractual obligations to Death Row. And he really just saved himself. And then when I asked him about it, he said, oh, well, why don't you set up this ghost publishing company? You know what I mean? Because Suge ain't getting a dime from me. That was his exact word. How I looked at it, though, was, and I can understand he had to make his move. But how I looked at it was, okay, you want me to go behind Suge back and write for you when I ain't really got my proper money in the first place. But then you want me to go behind Suge back and take chances on crossing this when I see what he do to that crossing. And then, but you ain't even doing the right. You know what I mean? So to me, that showed, because he came at the friend role in the beginning like we was buddies. You know what I mean? I always thought he was looking out.
Across situations like those faced by Quentin Miller and Jay Flex, we see how precarious the road of a ghostwriter really is. Because the minute that it's you or them, the mainstream artist won't hesitate to throw you to the side in order to save their own skin. So while examples like Eminem, the DOC, and Snoop show that it could be an important stepping stone in your career, more often than not, it's only going to bring drama when these rappers are outed for not really being the person who opens their rhymes. So the real question is if the risk is worth the potential reward.